have a subject about digital identities. And thank you. And we have the pleasure of welcoming Amelia Anders' daughter and Gregor Lilbransky. No.
Bransky.
Gregor Bransky. Sorry, I tried to say your pseudonym at the same time as well. I invite you both to come stay here and to have this little microphone for the recording.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Do we need to hold it?
Or you can
also attach it to ourselves. Yeah. No, but we're two people. Yeah, it will be fine.
So the mic is just for the screen, so you still have to speak to the room.
We'll try to organize everything, like, logistically. Everyone is sitting down that wants to be sitting down in the room, and if not, we'll sort that problem out later. My name is Amelia Andersdotter. I'm from Sweden, where we have a very high level of EID adoption. It's very used. We have the most authentications per annum per citizen. You can do your taxes with your electronic identification in Sweden. I also used to work in the European Parliament on the first EIDAS regulation, so not the first trust services legislation in the EU ever, but in 2013-14 when they were creating the first directly applicable law for EID in the European Union.
Hello, my name is Gregor Bransky. I'm from Germany. Our EID adoption is currently at 6%, but higher at the younger generation. Our EID usage is rare. We can pay our taxes digitally without using EID. We're very worried about over-identification because in Germany we believe peoples are not numbers. We tried that. It didn't work 80 years ago. And I'm very, very unhappy with the current approach where the EID is heading because it's going that way.
So our points today will relate to the second EIDAS regulation from the European Union, which was passed in 2024, and which seeks to establish a generalized European identity wallet for the benefit of citizens when interacting with private or public parties. Hopefully, we will have convinced you at the end of our 10 minutes that the word identity makes people, in particular politicians, discuss the lives of private citizens in a way that isn't helpful. And that maybe the beneficial use cases for European identity, in fact, we can find more in the authentication and authorization of business-to-business transactions and when persons are acting on behalf of their organizations in commercial settings.
Developing this presentation has been very interesting. We come from different countries in the EU with different approaches to identity and different levels of introduction of identity and authentication in online environments, even offline environments for that matter. Trying to wrap our heads around the state of art in Germany and Sweden, business models, visions of authorization, etc., has been an adventure and continues to be so. But that said, we have some real problems we agreed also.
It's your slide, actually.
Oh, that's mine. Okay, so why EID? I'm not sure if you actually were online sometime, but you get this button's jumping in your face, which is sign in with Google, sign in with Facebook, sign in with Apple, and sign in with Twitter. And every time an app or website asks us to create a new digital identity to easily log on via a big platform, we have no ideas what happens to our reality. It's the idea that the European Union took on that, and they decided that they want to protect the digital sovereignty of their citizens. And basically, this seems to be part of the vision that is argued publicly.
But so we identified a different problem, which we think makes more sense to solve at the European level. And it was kind of a mind-blowing experience for me to figure out this, that apparently it is in the European Union a problem that when you're handing over a concrete truck on a construction site, there is no easy way for the driver of the concrete truck to hand over the keys to the truck to the right recipient and knowing where the concrete goes. And so there's this concrete theft problem where people are handing over concrete trucks to the wrong person, causing massive delays for construction companies when trying to lay the groundworks for buildings. I mean, we can all intuitively see how this is an international logistics chain where you have people generally of lower educational backgrounds having to perform complex tasks that require proper authorization, and they have no easy mechanism of doing so. So this would not be such a big problem for the construction sector if there was a reliable, cross-border, interoperable way of authenticating those persons who should hand over a concrete truck and receive a concrete truck, for instance, with a mobile phone application using NFC. And so in these business-to-business transactions, there's really a lot of benefits to be gained. There's a lot of money that goes into these ideas of a generalized European identity. But it's also kind of obvious that a generalized identity scheme would have a lot of stakeholders. So too often the political parlance is kind of dominated by this vision of the EU as a shield between the citizen and Google, but the real problems, the real benefits for European citizens and businesses are in solving other problems entirely than how we're faced with this login screen.
So let's not underestimate the challenge of developing these systems. For multiple sectors to coordinate across multiple borders requires a lot of common capacity. This is why companies turn to the government to help set up the right cooperation mechanism to get a good technical outcome. You can see the problem of harmonizing infrastructure when it comes to getting trains run through all of Europe. If you look at train tracks with different gauges, you can either build train tracks that work for all gauges, or you can build trains that run on multiple gauges. Both is painful and expensive. There is hope on the horizon. There is 224.0187 CNS, which is the security of identity cards of the European citizens and of residents document issued to the Union citizens and their family members, which we will have available by 2031, according to current planning. So eIDAS 2 is pointing the question that it doesn't have a harmonized infrastructure to run on and still doesn't wants to achieve stuff. So back to real problems.
Yeah, so one of the very real problems facing the European Union in this field is that harmonizing infrastructures across member states causes the member states to be territorial. And so the current theory of change is that you will have a bunch of lawyers at the European Commission discussing with a bunch of lawyers in the member states whether you can make delegated acts to kind of force everyone to use different widths of train tracks, to follow on that analogy. And so that's turning out to be more challenging than originally foreseen. They have been at it for like 20 years in their defense. So this is like just the latest iteration of attempting to solve infrastructure problems. But there are several other challenges with building identity schemes, like how do you make the proper economic model? So one challenge in authentication is that if I'm trying to buy something from Gregor, and he wants to authenticate that it's me, but we're using an identity provider that's a third party to authenticate who I am. Yeah, how does that third party get paid? Who's going to pay them? I have no relationship with them. My relationship is with Gregor. It's from him I want the service. His relationship is with me. He wants my money. The identity provider is kind of left hanging. Like, it's not really clear how they would get paid. Is it per authentication? This is the method currently adopted in Sweden. Is it some kind of subscription service where you can make a number of authentications per month?